here naked. That's the truth, and so are you, and it's okay.
Today's episode might be the most important one that I have recorded to this date. It might be the most important one I ever record. I do not know, but all I can tell you is thank you for getting naked with Nate, and welcome. My guest today is an incredible woman named Leonie Hubert, and I basically use this as an opportunity to tell a very important story close to my heart. For any of you who have followed me, or if you're just a stranger, basically I have been struggling with pretty severe depression for some years now, combined with chronic pain. And really it reached a point where I kind of didn't want to exist anymore. I won't say that I was suicidal. I didn't have a plan or anything like that, but I certainly wished that things would just end. And I'm in a very different place today. It's not like everything's better. I still have my down days, but overall, my base level is just in a whole different world. And a huge part of that, if not the majority of that, has to do with psychedelic-assisted therapy. So I have basically taken several what they call hero's doses, or I guess large dose psychedelics of what is known as magic mushrooms or psilocybin. And it is really helping me. And the reason that I wanted to do this particular episode is because Leonie is an incredible science writer. Well, I'll tell you a little more about Leonie now and then why I've brought her on. Leonie is a science writer, an award-winning science writer from South Africa, also an author who uses different ways of storytelling to grapple with many of today's tough issues as we try to find ways to live together on a tightly packed planet. And now I heard about Leonie because she's running a podcast called The Psychonauts. All of this will be in the show notes at nakedwithnate.com. And her podcast, she's basically bringing to light the incredible anecdotal stories as well as the research that goes with it that is showing that psychedelic-assisted therapy, and specifically with psilocybin, can really, really help people. People with treatment-resistant depression, people with anxiety, with PTSD, fear of death anxiety. I can't remember that. There's a better way of saying that. But anyway, so when I heard about her, I just knew that I really wanted to have a conversation with her because of the incredible, positive, powerful experiences that I personally have had. And I also thought it would be an opportunity for me to share my story a little more deeply with you and with whoever else you choose to share this with, because maybe it'll help. And then it's not just in my anecdotal story, but I'm actually chatting with someone who's incredibly knowledgeable. She is a journalist, a research journalist, a science writer. Like, she really goes deeply into her topics. And so I felt like she's a really good voice who could help all of us to understand something a little better, which, I mean, if we talk about it, psychedelics have been considered one of the meanies, you know, like it has been lumped in with things like heroin and cocaine and crack. And like in South Africa, it's a Schedule 7 drug, which means it is at the same level of sort of harmfulness as things like heroin. And the research is showing that that's just absolutely not true. There's so much good stuff in the show notes. Like, I have a link to a big research study that was done where they showed that alcohol is actually the most dangerous of all the drugs, and it's the one that's legal. But anyway, there's a lot to listen to here, so I'm going to let you get into it. I really do just listen with an open heart, listen with an open mind. Thank you so much to Leonie for giving her time for this. She came to my house. You'll hear dogs in there. It's like all kinds of stuff unfolded. But we cover, and she so courageously shared so much of her own personal story. I shared my personal story, and as well as we talk a lot about the research that's being done and just kind of get into it on all levels. So thank you, Leonie. Thank you to you, my dear listeners. If you feel like supporting this podcast, please do so. It is currently a labor of love on my part. It takes many hours to do, and I would love to be able to make some income through it so that I can help to hire maybe an editor and some other people to give me more time to create. So if you'd like to help with that, then please visit nakedwithnate.com and become a patron through the links there. But otherwise, thank you for being here. And also leave a review. That's super rad. I love reading reviews. Obviously, prefer to read happy ones, but any reviews are great. I love reading them. So that's it. Please enjoy this episode of Getting Naked with Nate. Well, first of all, just thank you for being here. Like, this is very exciting for me. And based on everything I've read about you and everything that you're doing, it's like so much alignment for what I think the world needs right now and the information that's going to help us, I don't know about get through, but certainly navigate what's unfolding around us. And so for myself, my story very briefly is one of coming from struggling with pretty severe depression for a few years and also some chronic pain and not really understanding what it was, being in denial for a long time. I think that's also quite common. But then looking for solutions, right? Like how do I, what do I do? Do I go on antidepressants? Do I go into a psych ward? Like what are my options? And I mean, I come from a background of quite alternative in a sense. So I'm always looking at those kind of modalities and ideas. And it just kept coming up again and again and again that psychedelics are this like untapped resource of at least potential based on what the research is showing. And the more I researched into that, the more I was like, this seems like something that could really help. And the more I looked into SSRIs or antidepressants, the more I was like, this seems like something that's insane. Like this could cause me serious damage. Like the side effects are actually worse often than the symptoms of the mental health challenges. And anyway, so through a long process of really, well, I discovered the whole psychotherapy-assisted psychedelic thing, right? Which is like Stan Grof, who was one of the fathers of that. And then that, and I was like, because I don't want to do it alone. It seems insane. I was recreationally psychedelic in my youth and it was never really like, I don't know, I would never want to do it as a way to go into myself. Like it just seemed insane. Anyway, so I finally found a psychologist here in Cape Town who was willing to work with psychedelics. But again, it's completely illegal. As you, I think you said, Schedule 7 is the one here, which is equal to Schedule 1 elsewhere. But I've been working with it. I've been for the last several months. I've done two what they call hero's doses, the 5-gram dried psilocybin, and also been microdosing, so sub-perceptual doses. So for anyone who doesn't know what those are, and so I guess what I'm interested to chat with you about is because now I have had this experience of feeling like I'm coming alive again, very literally feeling like I've gone from wishing that I could die and thinking about suicide, but thinking about it going like that seems like a terrible idea in itself because it's risky. It doesn't succeed. You end up with lifelong issues from like all these. I mean, I really was like desperate to find a way out, however that looked, and to turning around and being like, I wake up in the morning now and I'm like excited about my life, like my day, which was not the case for a long time. And so I'm going, holy shit, this stuff is so important. But I'm going that from an anecdotal perspective. And so why I'm interested in hearing from you is like in South Africa today, as someone who has researched this extensively, what is your experience of this? Like how is it approached right now? What is your work in it? And what do you feel about anything I just said?
Oh, so I could talk for hours.
I know.
Maybe I should start with how I got interested in the subject. You know, I've spent the past almost 20 years now writing about climate issues, energy policy issues, food security in the city, you know, why the city leaves us hungry, heavy and sick. These are the kind, this is my day job. All right, so let me start with my own story. I guess I was about 40 when I was introduced to psychedelics in a recreational way and started using mushrooms very responsibly in a recreational space. But at the same time, a few years ago, I then heard about this woman in Somerset West who was arrested for allegedly hosting these mushroom ceremonies. And I was just going to do a single feature article on that. And because of my own interest from a recreational perspective, and because I actually happened to know this woman through writing circles, I was really curious. You know, this was an ordinary kind of suburban type grandmother who was potentially facing a 15-year jail term for having allegedly 2 kilograms of dried mushrooms in her home. That's what the police say they found. So I was just going to do a single feature article for a newspaper. And then I started looking at outside of the country at a lot of the clinical trials where these really legitimate medical labs, medical research units were doing clinical trials on using psilocybin from mushrooms to treat things like depression and end-of-life anxiety and substance dependence. And I was just blown away by the story and I thought there's more than one story here. There's a whole book. Yeah. But I couldn't get the local publishing industry to bite. Either it was too weird, too fringe, or maybe a little bit too radioactive, to borrow the term from Sam Harris. So I thought, you know, the story is way too important for it to be buried by conservative ideas or, you know, the financial constraints of the publishing industry. So I thought I would I would just self-publish something. And I was going to write a book, but of course books don't sell well in South Africa and they're expensive. Mm. So I thought, why don't I just take it a step further and launch into a podcast? Mm. And basically doing what you're doing, except, excuse me, instead of doing this kind of conversational podcast, I decided I would write a series of stories where each chapter or each episode is a standalone story, a scripted story that draws the stories of people in the underground community here in South Africa who are using psilocybin, either as you are for treating depression or something, or else just for their own self-actualization. Yeah. So taking those stories, meeting these fascinating people, hearing their tales, and then weaving it together with the clinical trials, the information coming from abroad. You know, this is hardcore peer-reviewed cutting-edge science. So then I'd launched into this podcast, which has allowed me to kind of bring into the country in a popular science way this important research, which otherwise is not getting covered by the medical community here or the health writers. I mean, I'm astonished that the findings from abroad are so exciting around this as a breakthrough medical technology for treating mental illness, that I'm just surprised that our medical community is absolutely silent on it. You know, there's a tiny handful of therapists who are tuned in, yeah, and they are preparing themselves because the medicine is coming. Yes. I mean, we can talk a little bit more about how it's used in the clinical process and how it's going to be introduced here. Mm. But the point is, within 5 years, it will be legal for medical use in the States and probably the UK, which means that it's coming to South Africa. But our medical community needs to train up, right, and be ready for it and have best practices in place and know how to administer the therapy.
Exactly. Yeah. Thank you so much. It's such an inspiring story to hear. And I feel like that's such a critical... The storytelling, the aspect of bringing the personal into the impersonal, into the data-driven kind of stuff and making it about people and about the journey that we're all on, I think that's such a key element, because I think of myself, again, stories and making it personal. It's like I was raised in a family where we openly talked about mushrooms and psychedelics and weed and like all that kind of stuff. So for me, it was always like normalized in a sense. And yet it took me years to stop thinking of psilocybin as a like a drug in the sense that we've come to understand, like cocaine or heroin or things like that. Even when I had seen people I highly respected who were saying like these ayahuasca, like I did ayahuasca and it's changed my life. And these were people who are running highly successful businesses who I was like in awe of as mentors. And they were and I was like, but they're doing drugs. Like, you know, and it took me years. So I think what comes up for me when I hear you say that is like South Africa is behind in that sense, because there's still that over like that community groupthink, if you will, like where it's still trapped in the idea of what people think it is, which has been sold to us over the last whatever, since the prohibition in the 40s or whenever, the 60s or whenever, late 60s. And but I'm so glad that you're telling the stories that you're telling, because I think that is what's shifting the, like it's opening it up. And I mean, especially among my peer group, there are so many people who are out there like exploring these things. And I'm just very excited for it to be properly legislated and stuff, so it's safe, you know, because
yeah,
that's
absolutely
scary.
So my next little piece of activism, and maybe I should give you my background, because mine is completely different to yours. So I grew up in a household where my parents were Catholic and then became evangelical Christian. You know, from my early 20s, I've been a bit of a left-wing atheist, but I would have called myself culturally very conservative. You know, I drank alcohol, that was it. I don't really like weed, it doesn't work for me. So nothing else, I didn't touch anything else. And then suddenly at 40, I discovered psychedelics and I literally had my mind blown. And even when I look at my writing, I begin to think of my brain function as pre-psilocybin exposure and post-psilocybin exposure. Because I think there's no control group to compare myself to, but yeah. I think my writing is just much more potent as a result. Anyway, but the point is that I discover psilocybin and realize what an incredibly amazing substance this is and realize how dangerous alcohol is. And my side of the family has in its bloodline an anxiety disorder that has resulted in self-medication with alcohol, which has in some cases resulted in self-harm and suicide. So I'm very aware of the fact that that is a dangerous drug. So my next point of activism, I want to have a T-shirt made that has a glass of wine spilt over with the wine spilling on the table. And at the top of it, I'm going to write, I prefer safer drugs.
Yeah. Yeah, for real. There was actually a guy in England, I wish I could remember his name, but he was in quite a high position in the drug administration there. And he was, I think, lost his job because he said, he's like, ecstasy is substantially safer than alcohol.
Yes, Professor David Nutt.
There you go. That was it, David Nutt. Yeah. That's the one. Yeah.
So David Nutt was the guy who headed up this fantastic bit of research that was that showed that MDMA and psilocybin mushrooms and LSD are so much safer than alcohol, nicotine, cocaine, all these other substances. Right. And because he got a little bit lippy in the media, the government got a bit nervous with him. But his I can send you the scientific paper, but the graph that he shows, he produced as a result of that body of research, has been circulated quite widely and is one of the most potent kind of visual demonstrations of how very, very safe psilocybin mushrooms are. Amazing. Having said that, we do need to talk about the supervision.
Absolutely. Oh, please. Yeah. I mean, so for myself, again, the personal story is like I experimented as a young person, maybe 17, and then I had maybe 4 or 5 times as a sort of older teenager. And it was always like recreationally, but then I would have these very powerful transformative experiences and be like, I don't feel like I should be doing this in these environments. And I kind of walked away from it of my own accord then and didn't revisit it or any of those kind of substances for a long time. And then through the medicine idea of like, wait, this could maybe help me. But then I had an experience or two where I was using it as a medicine, as something to transform and to go into those healing processes. But I did it by myself. And it is so ill-advised. So from a personal standpoint, but then having read the beautiful work of, I mean, Michael Pollan, Stan Grof, James Fadiman, like all these incredible people, and the whole thing about set and setting. So I don't know if you want to talk us through that a little bit, but definitely for anyone listening to this right now, like, please don't feel overly enthusiastic about us going like, this stuff can really help, because the key of set and setting. But anyway, if you'll...
Okay, yeah. So let's talk about 3 things very quickly, and let's assume that maybe the listeners aren't familiar with the wider context. So how this treatment works. So ordinary antidepressants, for instance, like SSRIs, you take the substance every day so that the chemical is in your body and it's therefore effective. So it may also not be effective, it depends. Yeah. But you'll take it for months or years at a time. And it's keeping the substance present in your body is what makes it work. Yeah. Psilocybin is very, very different, and all psychedelic assisted therapy processes are different. So 2 things seem to happen. Why the substance is effective is if you take a large dose, and we can talk about dosing just now, you have, so let's say between 2 and 5 grams of dried mushrooms, you have a very deep subjective experience, this so-called psychedelic experience. So if you have the powdered mushrooms, you drink it in a tea on an empty stomach where you've been fasting for a few hours, you've supervised, you almost within 15 minutes, you have this almost potent feeling of being pushed to the ground. You can't really move your body. For the first hour, you will usually see these incredible visuals which respond to music, and music is critical as a kind of supporting container. And then for the next sort of 2 to 3 hours, you have these incredible insights. And so there's this deep subjective experience you have during the dosing session. And people have described that as it's like 10 years of therapy in a night. Mm-hmm. So instead of just understanding something about yourself and the world intellectually, you actually feel it in your body. And it's that the potency of that experience that appears to be directly linked to the unlocking of depression, the unlocking of ruminative thought, and the ability to then kind of commit to breaking addictive patterns. That is one of the mechanisms. The second mechanism that seems to be working is that after the substance has left your body, and this is the startling, amazing thing, once the substance has left your body, it appears to the positive benefits linger for weeks and sometimes even months afterwards. And what seems to happen is that the psilocybin dampens down the ruminative thought processes in your brain. And the amazing thing is that if you put someone into an MRI scan, someone who's a competent meditator who spent years meditating, and you put someone in a brain scanner who has is on a psilocybin dose, the brain functions look almost identical. So what you can achieve through years and years of dedicated sitting practice, you can achieve in a few hours on psilocybin. So that's why this process seems to be so effective. But that what happens in that dosing session is a very potent experience. So your senses are heightened, your cognitive process is heightened, your emotional experience is off the charts amplified. So if you have something go slightly wrong, like the dog barks, or someone knocks at the door and it's the pizza delivery guy's gone to the wrong house, you're not in a position to process that kind of intensity. And also, it can be quite alarming. It's quite a weird thing to feel your brain going in the directions that it's going in, and it can be quite frightening sometimes. And if you don't have someone with you to manage the environment, music is absolutely key to deal with the door if someone knocks, then things can go horribly wrong. And if they go wrong, they can go really wrong, which then undermines the potency of the experience. Absolutely. And the benefits that you'll have afterwards.
Yeah. Beautiful. Oh my gosh, there are so many things you said in there that I just like, oh, so much goodness. So it links to me, and I can only ever really tell these stories through my own lens. And my experience of my first assisted Heroes Dose, 5 grams dried, was terrifying. But I was there, I was lying down, I didn't have to do anything, I just had to lie there. But what happened once I allowed the terror to move through me, because the terror itself was like a defense against actually feeling stuff. And when I really let go, what it took me to, and as someone again who had lost the sense of wanting to be alive, that there was no purpose, no meaning, no reason, what it took me to was an experience of something that is entirely ineffable, that is actually indescribable. And it is what, you know, a mystical experience. It was something, it reconnected me to everything, where I felt myself as a part of a whole that at its base level is pure love. And it sounds so cheesy and so woo to say it, you know, it's like, oh my gosh. But in my subjective experience, it was entirely real, and it still feels entirely real. I can still think back to it and go, yeah, that was, there was nothing false about that. And so I'd be curious to know, like, because you said a little earlier about your being an atheist, and what is your experience of the divine or spirit or God or however you want to call that? Like, I completely fall apart because my parents needed me to be together. And so in one of the ways, like, my parents used to do, they had a book called God, the Rod and Your Child's Bod, which was about how as a good person believing in God, you should definitely beat your child as a form of disciplining them. And so when I would, I know we can go so into this, but one of the things that came out of that was that when I would express an emotion, say, for example, I was upset about something and I was crying, one of the things my dad would say to me is, stop crying or I will give you something to cry about. Which was a threat to beat me, you know, to give me a hiding. And it's like, so if my emotions weren't appropriate according to his perception or his needs and desires, then he would just crush them in me. And I look at that and I think, so I never had the opportunity to really fall apart as a child and observe the world continue without me. And so just what you were saying now, like, hits me so deep. It reflects so deeply that there is a part of me that feels like I'm the one who has to carry the world, like that the weight of this experience of life is on my shoulders. And it's like, yeah. Anyway, just, I love what you said. And I hope that anyone out there listening who has similar feelings can also reflect and resonate with that. So thank you. Anyway, that was some good shit.
I want to us to summer it. It's like, what happened is we became victims of our own potential. They made us believe that we must do something to earn the space and the place that we have in the universe. And that's bullshit.
Yeah.
I am supposed to be here, entitled to be here. It's my freaking birthright. And I can do with my lifetime whatever I want to do, as long as I am respecting the order of things, as long as I am respecting others and not harming anybody. Whatever I do with my talents, it's up to me. And when I reclaim that power, when I regain that sovereignty, then is when my gifts and my potential and all of those things that I express on my website can flower by themselves and blossom and become whatever it is that I was meant to be, which was not what those adults around me wanted to project on me. So for me, for the people that is listening, it's like, you guys, reclaim your right to do with your life what you want and to take the time to figure out what that is. And don't let the outside world make you believe that because you are talented, you must do something specific. Or because you are not talented, which is just the flip side of the same stupid speech, you cannot do something. Because that's victimizing us. And I think that the time that we live in now is the time where humanity has an opportunity to move from victimhood into mastery, collectively.
Yeah, it's interesting because I feel like I'm, like I was saying earlier, I'm at this point now where even though I've been aware of and wanting to do, to make these shifts in my life for a long time, it's like now I'm at the point where I've basically burnt out in some way where yes, I've made music that I'm proud of, very proud of, and that I believe in. And I know I've impacted a lot of people in the world positively through that creativity, which is a core passion. But I also did that. Part of that was because I wanted people to look at me and say, he's a cool guy. Look at that cool musician. Look how he's the cool Nate Maingard. Look how sorted and together he is and how special his music is. And I needed that, like, tell me that I'm worthy so that I can feel worthy. But it obviously, it doesn't work, right? And so I've reached the point now where I'm actually completely exhausted, where I don't have the capacity to pretend anymore. And it's actually preventing me at this point from creating as much because I don't have the energy for it. And so what I'm confronted by now is, what the fuck do I do? Like, or how do I, what happens next? It's like, I think of the story of Buddha, actually, who was, you know, if whether it's true or not, but the story is beautiful of how he was a prince and he'd never experienced death in his life. And his whole life had been beautiful abundance and wealth. And then he was riding down the road one day and he saw a man dying on the side of the road. And suddenly he's like, oh my gosh, death exists. And it just like, and then he left his wife and his family and his children. And he went off and became an ascetic in the woods and began his whole journey that led to him achieving enlightenment. And but to do that journey, he had to leave behind everything that he had built and that he had experienced in his life. And in some ways, it's like, here I am with this career that I've worked so hard at and with these patrons I love and my, like, and just my whole life that I've kind of built. And yet there's a part of me that's like, I can't really experience any of it because I need to do that work of inner work. And I don't know how to, it's like, I don't know how to afford it in a way, both financially and emotionally. Like, how do I afford to step more deeply into my journey and still have a life to come back to in a sense? So I don't know if there's not really a question in there, but it's just a feeling and a kind of, yeah.
Yeah. Well, one of the things that this question or sharing sparks is one of my favorite sentences that my mom told me once. I don't even remember when. And I have, of course, translated into English because Spanish and my mom talks to me in Spanish.
Say it in Spanish first, if you don't mind. I'd love to hear it in Spanish. And then...
La comprensión es cuestión de un instante y no de un proceso. Just comprehension, means understanding, is a matter of an instant. It's not a process. So the hero's journey, Buddha's journey, Jesus' journey, the journey can take a lifetime. It can take half of a lifetime. It can take a second of realization. And often when we hear the word journey, we envision something long, heavy, complicated, that requires a lot of sacrifice. So I just want to invite everyone in the process of finding themselves and taking this journey to open their minds to the fact that it could be 1 second. It could be a day, it could be a week, it could be a matter of a few months, but it could be a second. You can wake up the day you see your child die in front of your eyes in 1 second. And I just use a very extreme example because someone shared this with me a few days ago. But you can also wake up the year that you battle cancer, or you can wake up the moment that you sit in front of the right teacher and listen to the right words. So, and I think this brings us into the core problem of this this anxiety that we feel around who are we and what are we doing and where is our worth and our value, is that we're constantly waiting for it to come from the outside. You are constantly hoping, you, me, us, we are constantly basing our success and our personal validation in what comes from the outside. People that look at you and say how amazing you are, how put together you are, how awesome your music is. That will never, ever, ever hit home. And you can talk with people that is high up there with thousands and millions of followers. We know the stories of famous musicians and artists that end up committing suicide, abusing drugs, in catastrophic relationships, a top success in your career and a freaking huge failure in your life. It's a common recipe. It's a common thing that we see. Because it is not going to fulfill our souls to hear from outside, only when it comes from the inside. And I know when we are in the dark night of the soul and someone tells us, oh, in order to be love, to feel love and to love others, you need to love yourself. And you think like, go fuck yourself with that. I've heard it 1,000 times. Now tell me how I get there. Right?
Yeah, it's all right.
So I battle with depression, bulimia, anorexia, drug abuse, and it all culminate and end in an abortion. That was the day where I was hit by the magnitude of my failure, if you will. The moment you choose to kill life, if you are a little bit conscious, some big questions arise inside of you. And that was for me the instant where understanding hit home. That was my moment where it was a matter of an instant and not a process. And yes, there had been a process before and there was a process after. And we are all works in process. But something in that event in my life, an event that many women go through without giving it much importance and go through numerous times in their lives, it just confronted me with the reality of the opportunity that I was having to either look inside or continue looking outside, look inward or continue looking outward. How looking inward is for each one of us, it's impossible to create a recipe, and whoever sells an online course for this doesn't really understand how this works, because each one of us have our own journey. But for me personally, it comes to being able to have an integrated human experience. It's being able to bring our minds, our emotion, our body, and our soul into harmony. Because the dissonance of our lives, it's because each one of those four is playing in a different key. And as a musician, you know, it doesn't work. So when I understand self-love, experience self-love, my soul can speak through self-love. And my body has a kinesthetic awareness of how self-love means. Now we can start talking about self-love. But as long as it is just a concept, it doesn't have a real impact in our human experience.
Yeah, it's so interesting. I actually spoke about this a bit last week. And just, first of all, thank you so much. I'm really enjoying your clarity and the sort of messages you're bringing. But it, yeah, one of the things that came up last week was around, wait, I've lost it. I've forgotten. I was just like floating on the stuff you were just saying. It's like, I need to take a moment.
take a moment. That's going to give me a second to take water.
Yes.
Back.
Okay. So what I was thinking was how I feel I'm in such a privileged position because I have a group of patrons who are pledging every month and who are supporting me, and I'm making enough money from that that I don't have to do anything else at this point. And the part of me that's really struggling with that and that feels guilt about that has to do with that I'm not currently fulfilling what I considered was my promise. And I spoke about this. Anyone who's listened to the previous episode will hear this similar kind of conversation. But I guess what I'm trying to say is that it's something I wrestle with and struggle with, is that a lot of my patrons don't have the time wealth that I do to, and it doesn't see, and maybe I'm projecting that onto them, but it feels like I'm blessed to be in a position where I can take the time to sort of go inward and look into myself and fall apart and rebuild myself and like do go through all of those processes. But there are so many people in this world who doesn't seem have that opportunity, where they're trying to take care of a family or pay off huge debt, or they don't even have the access to the information. Or, I guess that's actually, as I'm saying it and thinking about it, I realize that that's part of my insecurity, is that I feel like I don't deserve this when other people do more. And maybe, and that's actually my stuff to work on, is that we all deserve it as much as each other. And I don't, it's again that thing of, I don't get to control the universe. I don't get to tell, like, take the weight of it all and be like, okay, I have to fix this whole thing. All I can do is sit with myself and be like, this is my situation, and trust that there is value in the privilege that I do have. And I don't know how you feel about that, because it's like you have committed so much time all these years to your own journey, and now you're able to support others. But how did you keep prioritizing yourself and stay like centered and focused on that, when this world, at least the message I get from the world, is that we have to be constantly producing stuff. We have to be showing how valuable we are to be okay in the world, right?
No. Yes, and that's bullshit.
Yeah.
Absolute bullshit. I love it, because in when you edit this podcast, I invite people to listen to what I'm going to say now and then probably rewind again to listen again what you just said, your last sharing. Because it's super beautiful how you gave the problem and the solution in the same 3, 4, or 5 sentences. I'm going to ramble probably a bit more than you, but you did it brilliantly. You're a native speaker, and I need to beat around the bus a lot because I'm not yet a native speaker. So you said basically, and correct me if I'm wrong, but what I've heard you saying is, I have an amazing group of humans supporting me who don't have time, and I feel guilty that I'm not giving them something back, or I'm not fulfilling the promise that I made to them, and I have a lot of time that they don't have, right?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
So, yes, correct, great. So, first, time cannot be had. And your days have the same amount of seconds that your patrons' days. What you have that they don't have, which is already what you could give them, as a gift, it's the capability to make a different choice. And you were born with that. Nobody taught you that. Because you designed your lifestyle from very young. You didn't go to a coach that taught you how to make a choice. Your parents, if I don't remember wrong from the stories you've shared with me, your father already chose a different lifestyle. So that ability to make a choice that prioritizes one's life over effectivity, work, money, whatever it is that is absorbing this other people's time, it's one of the most precious gifts in the world. You have it and they don't. So instead of sitting at home feeling guilty for not being able to give them back, give them that. Because I tell you, I'm a life coach and I charge quite a bit of money to teach people that. And you could be sharing this with your patrons who already trust you, already know you, have already followed your career, and they know that is real. You don't need to build a website to explain them how much time you have. They know it. They see you. They see what you do with your time. So how can we become aware of our own gifts is the question. Because I don't know if you knew that you had this gift.
No. It's not something I've ever really consciously thought about. I mean, it's funny because as you were speaking and the kind of laying it out in terms of observing how my father chose to live his life or how my parents chose to have chosen to live, both of them have dedicated a lot of their lives to self-work and to growth and to healing in themselves. And my father, as an example, he's always been very time wealthy for a number of reasons. And then I hadn't really put that together, that's also led me. I have tried to do the normal like office work 9-to-5 thing. I just can't. I've tried.
Great. So congratulations.
I've had to find alternatives. And yeah, I suppose I love that idea. Instead of thinking about, I'm guilty because my patrons don't have the same time worth I do. Instead saying, well, how can I help you wonderful people out there who believe in me? How can I help you to find more time worth as well? And then we can kind of enjoy it together. I don't know. If that's what you were saying, that's what I got from what you were saying. And I just like that.
Exactly. Exactly. And that is in my humble personal belief. And please, if you're listening to this and you're battling with depression and this doesn't resonate with you, forgive me. But I believe this is the cure for depression. It's realizing where are my gifts and how can I serve with them? Because a human soul, it's here for a bigger purpose than a human life. And only when we experience transcendence, our souls are happy. And a sad soul is a depressed body. And a happy soul is a happy body.
This is this is exactly one of my teachers some years ago in London, a beautiful man named Paul. He had a statement. I don't know where he got it from or if he came up with it himself, but he would say to me, what is the purpose of life? The purpose of life is to be happy, do service, live and die consciously. That's it. Be happy, do service, live and die consciously. And I just resonated with that. And what you just said really clicked with me because I feel like I know in many ways what my gift is around communication and music and vulnerability and sharing and inspiring. And like I can see the impact that I have with people, but I don't still really know how to serve with that. It feels like it's felt like I've used that gift as I said earlier, as a selfish way to try to feed myself the stuff I don't feel like I've got inside. And so what I'm now in the process of is, okay, how do I take that? How do I go inward and from that place of self-love, find that self, like rediscover that sense of belonging that is intrinsic. I think that we come into the world with of like, I am here and I'm okay. I think that's how we all start out. Like to get back to that so that I can then turn around and then say, here are my gifts. Here is how I serve. And please take these gifts. And so that's like, I just love the way you put that. And it really kind of, it clicks. So thank you.
Yeah, my pleasure. My pleasure. I'm starting to share these things with the world. I'm starting to be able to actually articulate them after, as I said, almost a decade of figuring it out and experiencing myself. And I just recently came across a very simple, very powerful book called The Courage of Being Disliked in a very beautiful, easy to read way, because it's a dialogue between a philosopher and a young human with all the questions that we all have. And with Delirium Psychology, one of the strong points about Delirium Psychology, and we can develop this more if it's interesting for you, is that the purpose of the human search is to find out that it's okay for me to be here. I am part of something, that sense of belonging. And the only way that a human can reach that place is through transcendence, through finding something bigger than myself. Because subconsciously, we know we're dying And if this is all that matters, then we're fucking it up since the day we're born, because it's advocated to disappear and dissolve and become Earth. So if we don't have a real experience of something bigger, I mean, who's not to be depressed? We're dying. That simple, right?
Yeah.
Yet when we can experience community, service, transcendence, then there is a deeper meaning. And that in itself relaxes that existential anxiety. This book expresses it way better than I do. And in a sort of, you know, data-supported way. So it's just for the nerds out there.
I'll put it into the show notes for sure. So people can always find that nakedwithnate.com. They can go and I'll have links to all the things we talk about, which is, I love doing that. It's super fun. You mentioned something just a little while ago about how you're reaching the point where you are sharing your gifts. And it seems from what I've observed that you are using a lot of the things you learned from being a model, actress, media, study, all that kind of stuff. The example I'm thinking of now is your Rise of the Feminine video, which I think has almost 17,000 views at this point and a lot of really...
Oh no, baby. It's over 500,000 views by now.
What? That's wild. Yeah. That's amazing. And so I just love that how it can be. And this is something I found for myself as well, is that a lot of the time I've observed and heard from people that they feel like they're doing the wrong thing. They're like, oh, I'm doing something now, but I don't think it's what I'm meant to be doing and it's not useful. But my experience has been that everything we do ends up being a part of the toolkit that we use for doing whatever else we end up doing. And so, for example, like me studying photography, I didn't become a photographer, but it's given me a real sense of visuals in a way that I've used so much. Even in my lyrics, I've used, actually one of my recent songs, the first line says, on the days when the world turns gray, I try to love at least the textures and the shapes. And that was a reminder for me of when I was first learning to shoot for photography, was that we only shot in black and white for the first few months. And I had to learn how to see the world as shapes and textures, because that's what you can only see with black and white. And so it was just a different way of looking at the world. Anyway, so I'd love to hear if you want to just talk briefly about this video and what brought you to it and how you feel about that.
Yeah. Oh, it's so good to hear you say this, because I started filmmaking. And so for the last 6+ years, and I say six because the last one I already changed the way I was thinking. But before, between I finished my degree and the last year, I was like, why did I spend 5 years of my life studying filmmaking? I'm not going to make a film. This is not, you know. But there was a reason. There was a reason, and is that deep in my soul, when I was 17 years old and I had to choose a career, I knew that there was power in images and very especially in movies as a technology to bring a message across. Then I totally forgot about that idealistic, naive teenage dream of bringing inspiration to the world. And I went into the techniques and da-da-da-da-da and how the only way to be successful is to be the best next filmmaker. And I think that's the downfall of a lot of our passions and hobbies, is that once more we believe that you need to do something with it. You have to become a photographer. Yet if we look at our lives, when we learn to walk and to speak and to paint, and we learn from the pleasure of doing it, not because we're going to become the next best speaker or the next professional walker. It's because there's pleasure in doing and experiencing and exploring the world, right? So I, for 6 years, have always this conversation with friends and family of, oh my God, yeah, my career. I don't know why. I went 5 years to college to study filmmaking. Because what I want to do is not movies. I want to inspire the world. And then one day, being on stage with my dance company that I had formed here in Bali, a powerful woman was in the audience. She is one of the head organizers of 1 Billion Rising, an organization that fights and supports and works to end violence against women and girls in the world. They have presence in over 200 countries. They're doing amazing work. It's an organization founded by Ev Hensler, the writer of The Vagina Monologues. And so I had created a dance company to use art as a tool for transformation. So as a life coach and a somatic therapist, I believed in the power of reaching mindset with embodiment, really having creating spaces where humans could take a physical experience of self-realization, of inner peace, of release, of happiness, of all of these concepts. And the way I structured this was we would work in the studio for many months going through all of these topics, and it was just women to begin with. And then we will hit these places where our bodies understood. So just to give an example, we worked with sexual abuse because it's a topic that unfortunately one every three women still experience in their flesh. So in a company of seven women, four of us had experienced it in one form or the other, and one was currently experiencing some sort of abuse. So it was just a topic that all of them wanted to go through and experience. And we were talking about the abuse and how we felt abused by the world and how that broke us down, and how do we now, from that place of being broken, rebuild ourselves so that we can give ourselves the possibility and the opportunity to be powerful, inspiring women in the world. So over a process of, in this case, was over 6 months, twice a week, for a bunch of hours, we go into the studio and we experience and understand these things. And there is a day we hit a point where we have understood it, we have processed it. All of these women are starting to thrive in their lives. And now it comes what we have been talking about the last 40 minutes, you and I, which is, okay, the last step is transcendence. This is only ultimately super powerful if it's beyond myself. And that's the moment where we create a performance that embodies that journey of rising, of moving from being broken and abused to integrating that experience and using that experience to rise and shine and do the work that we are doing in the world. We condense that through the creative process into what we call a prayer performance. So it's a prayer in the way of a performance that aims to give and translate this experience into an audience. An audience that not always is going to understand literally what they're watching, but it's always going to have an impactful experience because these women are distilling their experience. They're not writing a script or creating a choreography. They are distilling their own human experience, and human experience is always relatable. All of us can relate to the experience of having a heartbreak, to the experience of having frustration, sadness, because we have all experienced it. So we created this performance and we brought it to the opening of Bali Spirit, and we had massive impact in an audience that is very much used to receive powerful performances. But there was a vulnerability and an authenticity and a truth in what was being expressed on stage that, and I'm just quoting some of the feedback we had, was unprecedented. It was the first time that I was seen in a performance. So this woman, Monique Wilson, came up to me after the performance and was like, that's what our movement needs. This movement that wants the end of violence against women and girls have become very heady, very militant, and very masculine in its approach. We're talking about statistics. We're raising funds to cover wounds. And we have become very radical, rational in our approach. So we're wanting to bring back the feminine to this movement that is for the feminine. We want women to know that there is a solution, not only that there is a problem, because we all know that there's a problem. But how does the solution look like? How does the solution feel? And that was the moment where the door opened for me to step up my game and start sharing bigger with the world. And then I needed to bring all the tools that I had learned. I needed to bring my filmmaking career, my music career, my composing career, my producer career, and everything so that I could answer to the opportunity that was given. So what I created for this organization was a video, because it was what I had studied. And I could remember the power of movies to translate the message. A video to inspire this rising of the feminine. Now, the process that I went through creating that video was something I wasn't expecting at all. I thought, okay, I have already experienced what it is to rise. My girls have already went through it. Let's just capture it. Let's just put the cameras, roll, bottle it up, and go. And the feminine requires way deeper work. So a project that was supposed to be 4 months took 18. And I personally, as the mama of the project, had to go through a personal journey of embodying the feminine. How does the feminine lead? Feminine leadership looks like something completely different and new for this world. How does the feminine express and move and direct and finance and all of that became a very personal journey that is still happening. I get an average of 5-6 messages a day, better than the 20-30 I was receiving first weeks. I don't know, it's like around 600,000 views by now. And I'm still learning to navigate. How does the feminine navigate impact, for example? So yeah, I don't know if I've answered your question or I'm just...
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, thank you. That's amazing. So obviously to anyone listening, this will be in the show notes, this video, and go and watch it and see what you feel and leave us a comment. And if you want to send any messages, actually, it's a good moment to say, where can people find you online? And if they want to get in touch with you, if maybe they want coaching or they just want to find out more about you. And I will put this into the show notes as well, but just let us know here.
Yeah, absolutely. So the video can be found in my YouTube channel. It is subtitled personally by me, so controlling that the words are saying the right thing to 5 languages now, I believe. So whatever your native language is activated is French, German, Arabic, Spanish, Portuguese. I think that's it. Bahasa soon. YouTube channel. So Laila Alkadri YouTube, subscribe. More content is coming soon. If you want to find me and my work, my website is the best option, lailaalkadri.com. There's where I explain what I do as a coach and how to find my next retreats and speaking engagements and festivals and stuff. And then where I am present in a daily basis and where I share a lot of these wisdom nuggets that I don't get to put on the website is on my Instagram and my personal and fan page on Facebook. So very simple, just click follow in all of those and you will get to know, you will get to be part of the tribe and receive all of this authentic raw yumminess, because I am pretty unfiltered with my sharings.
Yay, my favorite kind of sharing. And thank you so much, Laila. Just, yeah, a real pleasure to have you on and a real pleasure to be maintaining this friendship through what was initially quite, for me, a very tumultuous time, both personally in my life, but also our initial interaction, which maybe another time we could go into on another recording. I don't know if it would be valuable, but I learned a lot from that interaction. And so, yeah, just thank you for sticking around and being a good companion on this road. And yeah, thank you.
My pleasure. My absolute pleasure.
Wow. Take a deep breath. Let it out. Where are you right now? What is going on in your heart and your mind? I just want to say such a thank you to Laila again for coming on and for choosing to get naked with Nate, for being so honest and so real. And yeah, this is what I want this podcast to be. I want more of this. I want to dive deeper into the human experience and share that with you, my delightful listener. And yeah, it just means the world. So thanks. If you want to get this podcast directly into your email inbox every week, which I personally think is the best way, I'm having a bit of a tumultuous relationship with social media these days, to put it mildly. And so I feel like the best way for us to be in touch is directly, person to person, through our emails. It's where we have the control. There's no algorithm telling us what we should or shouldn't see. It's just us having an experience together and choosing that. So if you go to nakedwithnate.com, you can sign up on the mailing list there and you'll get the podcast into your email inbox every Thursday as it goes out. And I just think that that's the best way. And it also allows me then, if I have any other news or information, I can share it with you that way. And I don't have to stress that Facebook's not going to show it to you, or I have to pay for it to be seen, or it's just going to only be shown to people who already expect it, or I don't know. I just want direct human connection. And I think that social media right now is not doing the best job of actually helping us to connect authentically. And this is all about authenticity. So let's do that. Let's be authentic. Let's be real. This is also a great opportunity for me to say thank you so much to anyone who has gone and left reviews on iTunes or wherever it is that you listen. And it's so rad. And I actually want to read out a 5-star review from Japanetta, who is a lovely human I connected with through Periscope live streaming. And she says, excellent themes that feed our spirituality. Thanks for sharing positivity and good vibes. Nate, you are awesome. Japanetta, you are also awesome. Thank you for seeing and witnessing and reflecting what it is that I'm trying to do here. It means the world. Thank you so much. If you'd like to support this podcast, then please do. It would mean the world to me, and it makes a really big difference. To you, you might think $3 or $5 a month is not impactful, but it truly is. If you consider that you, with a bunch of other people, 10, 20, 50, 100, 200 other people, it adds up, and it allows me to keep this podcast ad-free, authentic, real, direct to you. And I'm doing this consciously with my community, because that's how I think the best way to do it is, and that's what I want to keep doing. So thank you for seeing the value in this. Thank you for sharing that. Thank you for committing to assisting me on this path. Thank you to all of my patrons who are already pledging. As you know, it is through your witnessing and your valuing of this project and of my music that allows it to really flourish and blossom in the world. Together we are growing something that has meaning, and I think that that's worth valuing in the world. It's worth giving time and energy to. So thank you. I hope that you got value out of this particular episode. I can't imagine that you didn't. And I want to hear from you. So please tell me. Go to nakedwithnate.com. Leave a comment on the post. Send me a private message if you'd like to. Leave a voice note if you want to. There are so many options, and all of them are valid, and all of them would make me feel very excited and delighted, because I love hearing from you. That's all from me. The last thing I have to say is thank you for getting Naked with Nate, and I'll see you next week.
Hard to open up my eyes when I feel like I've been blind all of my days. Now I'm wandering through the haze, and the world, it looks so crazy. Maybe that's just me, maybe it's just me. We all find our secrets, patient in the shadows, right there where we left them waiting. And no matter how far we run, they run right beside us. Our demons know our names better than anyone. See me trapped within this construct, beating at the locked up door. Tight, deep within my fist is the key to all I've missed. That the pain is just a teacher, and the cage is just a myth. We all find our secrets, patient in the shadows, right there where we left them waiting. No matter how far we run, they run right beside us. Our demons know our names better than anyone. Lie, lie, lie. Lie, lie, lie. Lie, lie, lie. I spend oh so many hours
giving up and giving power to the worst I can imagine lives in me. And now, oh, to my surprise, when the ghost as me disguised is the best at breaking everything, everything, everything I dream. Lie, 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 lie. Stay dry by dodging all the raindrops falling thick. Try lifting up your tongue to the rain, not just the sun. Nothing quite so simple was ever so much fun. We all find our secrets, patient in the shadows, right there where we left them waiting. No matter how far we run, they run right beside us. Our demons know our names. We all find our secrets, patient in the shadows, right there where we left them waiting. No matter how far we run, they run right beside us. Our demons know our names better than anyone.